Cassandra. It is early morning. You are all in the basement of the Pavis estate. Maeveris is conscious. I use the word conscious loosely. Her eyes are open. She makes noises when you talk to her. It's not entirely clear if she knows what's going on or where she is.
Okay.
It's sort of amazing that she is even alive. She looks like she should be a cadaver. Ellie, and compassion has taken over your body. He has been in your body for the past hour and a half now, making the preparations for this ritual. And compared to the last time you attempted this, it looks really, really, really different. For one thing, the rune on the floor, when you had tried it the first time, it was maybe like a 10-foot diameter at most. Now it takes up the entire floor. It's like 20 feet in every direction. It is way, 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 way more intricate. And the past couple minutes, compassion has in your body been puttering around the circle, fussing with little lines, readjusting things, infusing bits and pieces of it with mana. But that's not really where I want to focus. I want to focus on you, Cassandra. You, Elian, compassion through Elian told you that both of you, you with more specifically Faith and Maeveris, both have to be inside this enormous summoning circle or whatever it is. And because Maeveris really can't hold herself upright at this point, she has taken to just sort of leaning on your shoulder. And you two are sitting in this sort of eye of the storm, like this one little point of calm, as there are half a dozen mages running around you in every single direction. Is there anything that you are talking about or thinking about?
I feel like definitely like nervous rambling, even if May can't necessarily respond. Just like, it's okay, I'm here, this is gonna work, it's fine. I'm mostly talking to myself to make myself calm down. It's not working.
Yeah, it's really not working. Who else is present? Obviously, Elian. Well, Elian's there, but he's not there. He's in the background, as
busy.
It were. What about you, Sabri? Are you there?
My little sister. Of course I'm there.
Yeah. That's the sort of support we love to see.
Cute.
I don't like it. I'm looking very uncomfortable.
Lamin would be there. He's there in spirit. But, like, again, a darkspawn tried to eat him. He can't stand up very well because the darkspawn was chewing pretty fervently on his leg. But you know who is there? Ren is there. He has a very limited understanding of magic, but every time you look at him, Cassandra, he gives you, like, a double thumbs up, like, you can do it. It's fine. Don't worry about it. It's totally fine. And as Elian is making these, as compassion inside Elian is going around the circle making these last minute preparations, for just a moment, you hear,
Malia?
Yes, I'm here.
Are we home?
Yes, we are home.
Oh, that's good. I'm so tired.
I know, Kadan, but soon you won't be as tired.
Oh, all right.
And she sort of nestles into your shoulder. Compassion finishes up whatever work he was doing around the outside of the circle. He wipes his hands nervously off on Elian's pants, which is going to... He was using chalk to draw the lines, so you've got chalk on your pants now, Elian.
Oh, I love that.
That's a problem you're just going to have to live with.
Right.
And finally, he comes... shuffling up to you, Cassandra, and to Maeveris, but he's mostly addressing you because May is not entirely lucid right now.
Right.
He says, okay, so I finished the circle. The ritual is just about ready to start. Are you okay? Are you ready to do this?
To answer the first question, no, I'm not okay, but yes, better now than never. Let's do it.
Okay, that's the kind of positivity that we need going into this.
He stands up, and the other mages assembled. Like, Dorian is here. He's definitely helping. And of course, there are the other mages. There was Dalish from the Bulls Chargers. She's also here lending a hand. Leander is present. Obviously, he's not technically a mage, so he's just sort of in the back for moral support. And slowly begins this this chant. At first, it sounds like it looks like nothing is happening, right? Like he's just standing there, his eyes are closed, and he's muttering this low, long chant. You think it might be Elven, but you don't know, Cassandra. You've never heard Elven spoken in this way. Like you've heard bits and pieces from Sabray, but it doesn't sound like this. And as the chanting continues, it just keeps going on 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes of just this low, slow chanting. And from beside you, you hear Mayvera say, "Are you scared?"
"A little, but also excited. A lot of things."
She says, "Oh, I suppose it's better to be excited than afraid."
"True. What about you? How do you feel? Other than tired?"
"It is mostly tired."
She tries to laugh. It doesn't really work. She doesn't really have the energy to laugh. She says, it's sort of strange. Ever since we had that talk in the Fade, I've realized that I do have things to lose. What if it doesn't work?"
"May, we can't think like that, not after we got this far."
"It would be cruel, wouldn't it? Now that I realize everything that I stand to lose, if it didn't work."
"It will work. It will. It has to."
Faith, in the back of your head, Cassandra, is pulsing warmly. She is, like, I don't know if, it's a character decision, right? Whether or not this sense of faith is something that she is causing or she is aiding with. But whether or not she is causing it, she is in, like, the back of your head, and she is, like, paying attention. Like, she's, like, there 120%, and she's filling you with this pulsing warmth, like, "It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay. I promise it's going to be fine."
Yeah, I feel like she definitely welcomes that. Like, that's a feeling that she definitely needs and latches onto. Like, yes, I want to feel that, and I need that.
And it happens sort of, it's almost like falling asleep. It happens very slowly, and then all at once. The chanting that Compassion had been doing suddenly is accompanied by this ethereal glow around all the careful lines of this circle. It starts off kind of low, almost unnoticeable, but before long, the blue glow from these markings has almost filled the room. And you feel something too, Cassandra. It's a sort of strange pressure in the center of your chest. And based on the way you see Mayvera sort of double over, she feels it too. It's a strange coalescing of magic and energy from inside you pushing outward, like inflating a balloon inside a teapot. It's everywhere inside of you all at once. It doesn't hurt. It can't break you. You know it can't break you, but it's impossible to ignore. And then, quite abruptly, you black out.
Ooh.
And so does Mayvaris, and the light from this circle is so bright by this point that everyone surrounded can't see what's going on. And then, eventually, the light fades, and everyone except Cassandra and Mayvaris sees laid out before them. The duo that was in the circle is still in the circle, but now they are both collapsed upon the floor, lying next to each other.
I, like, start forward and, like, stop at the edge of the circle. I'm like, "Cassandra, Cassandra!"
Compassion, who's still an alien, says, I think it worked." Like, he shouldn't sound so unsure. Why does he sound unsure?
If it worked, why are they unconscious? Get them out
it's
of there.
It's a big spell. It takes a second. He says, "It should be safe to cross in any event." Like, he demonstrably the lines are no longer glowing. And he says, "It should be safe to cross. The magic's done."
I look at him very suspiciously, and I look at the floor. And then I walk into the circle, like, I'm, like, bracing myself, like I'm expecting to explode.
And you don't explode, you paranoid weirdo. And Dorian actually crosses into the circle. Actually, he beats you by a couple seconds. He crouches down at May Varys' side, and he shakes and he says, "May? May, are you there?" And May still looks pretty cadaverous, although that has less to do with the Blight and more to do with the fact that because the Blight had ravaged her so profoundly, she had stopped, like, eating and, like, hadn't been sleeping super well. So she still looks very bad, but her eyes immediately flutter open and she says, I'm so hungry. And Dorian almost breaks down in tears. He says, May, you're all right? And she says, I don't think I'm Mayvaris anymore. And then suddenly, like, something, like, snaps in the back of her head, and she whirls around and she looks down at you. And Cassandra, you are also coming too. You feel like you're waking up.
Definitely, like, I look around, like, in confusion. I'm like, what? Is it over?
Are you okay? You look up at Mayvaris. Her eyes are a different color.
I definitely blink, and I was like, I think so. Were your eyes always that color?
She reaches up to her eyes vaguely. She used to have these very bright, like clear sky kind of blue eyes. But now they're a dark foresty green. And she says, well, yeah, that can happen sometimes. That's how the magic works. Her voice sounds different too. It's not Mayvaris's voice. And it's also not really Faith's voice. It's sort of in the exact middle between the two voices. She looks tired and she looks hungry and she says, are you okay?
I just sort of like, I can't do anything else but laugh like, yes, I'm fine. We should get you food.
Yes, I'm very hungry. And finally, like the emotions sort of just happens all at once. And she throws herself forward and she throws her arms around your shoulders and she hugs you very tightly.
Oh, I definitely return that, like, just as tightly, like, it worked, of course, I knew it would. Yes, I definitely believe that and wanted to believe that, but it worked.
It's just, I feel like I'm seeing you for the first time again. Does that make sense?
Sort of. Yes, it does.
She said, I did warn you. I'm not really Mayvaris, not anymore. I'm also not really Faith.
It's new, but I think I like it.
She pulls back just enough to smile at you, and she says, and one thing hasn't changed. I don't know if I ever said it. If we ever said it, I'm gonna have to get used to new pronouns, I suppose. But you know that we loved you, right? Both of us did. You know that?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Cass definitely, like, looks for a second, and then just tears start streaming down her face, like, yes, I did know.
Dorian is in the back trying not to cry, like being really like low-key, like, you know, wiping his eyes with a hanky. It's fine. He's fine. Shut up about it. It's fine.
It's fine. Everybody. Everybody shut up.
And he gently pats Mayvaris's shoulder. And then he looks at, he decides, like, who is he going to order around? And then he decides, it's you, Sabre. What are you waiting around here for? She said she's hungry. Go get her something to eat.
Those allergies, man, really bad this time of year, right?
Shut up. If I want your opinion, I will ask you for your opinion. Go and get Mayvaris, Faith, some food.
Just wanted to know. This seems to be streaming down.
Get out!
It's fine. I, like, wander out. I'll get her some food.
And you take her upstairs, you get her a meal, and, like, everyone had braced you for it, Cassandra. Like, they were right. It's not Mayvaris. It's not Faith. It's a strange amalgam of both of them. Just talking to her, just for the first, like, 20 minutes, you get the sense that she has, like, the memories of both of them. Like, she has memories of being a child in Minrathis and also being an elf in Arlathan, you know, several thousand years ago. And she sometimes refers to herself as we, which is a little weird. But that's something that you're just going to have to get used to, I guess. And it seems crazy, but it worked. Like, it fucking worked. How do you spend your first night with... I feel like we should call her Fayvaris. That makes a...
I like that. Directly after, like, Cass just, like, goes around, like, hugging all of the mages involved. Some of them are probably like, okay, please don't touch me. And some of them are probably like, oh, what's happening?
Dorian is definitely one of the ones who just hugs you back, no questions asked. Like, he hugs you tightly. He's like, I can't believe we did it. I can't believe she's cured.
And then I put, like, my hands on, like, Compassion / Elian. I was like, oh, man, Elian is going to kill you for the pants thing, but thanks.
What pants thing? And he looks down. He says, oh, and then he abruptly gives Elian control again.
Oh, if this were not today. And I just hug Cass instead.
I'm like, it's fine. It's a good look. It'll be a new fashion in Valrio in no time.
Bullshit.
Mayvaris, like, she is, as soon as she goes upstairs and, like, starts insisting on cooking because Sabre's doing it wrong.
Of course. Oh, I wasn't cooking. I was like cutting up a vegetable or something. There's no way I was cooking.
Here, Maetheris, have this sliced raw carrot.
Yep. I think I was like I was expecting to go into the kitchen and have somebody else make food, but then there's nobody there, and so I'm like awkwardly like looking around, being like, "What does one do to cook in a kitchen? What the fuck even is this place?"
Get tea from there. Maybe put water in a.
Maetheris says she like puts a hand on your back. She's like, "I think it's a lost cause."
Oh, thank God! I just like step back.
And you step back and you let the people who know what cooking is take over. And you sit next to Ren, I imagine. He's also at the dining table. You sit down next to him and he's like, "I can't fucking believe you actually came up with a cure for the blight. That shit is crazy. Like, I think you might have made history a little bit. I think that's what you just did. Like, you cured the blight. You realize that, right?"
I like look at him and I'm like, "I didn't do that. What are you, Wrench? You know I don't do magic." I'm like looking horrified at him.
He says, "Man, you're fucking a mage and you're still weird about magic, huh?"
I mean, it was really cool, although it's really weird. Are they two people now?
He says, "Well, from what I can gather," like he doesn't have a great understanding of magic either. He just knows like the broad strokes. He actually paid attention when the keepers spoke and like explained to them about the beyond and the spirits and all and everything. Like,
oh, geez, it must have been nice to have a family growing up. I wonder, must make it really easy to listen.
You're from the same family. You're literally brothers.
Yeah, but after he left, I couldn't be expected to listen to what the keeper says. I mean, really, come on.
He says, "I mean, from what little I picked up, it sounds like the cure for the blight is like literally healing the soul, and I guess the way to do that is to infuse..."
Get a new one?
Yeah. Two dumbasses discussing magic.
Political theory with the Sabray brothers.
Magical theory with the two dumbest motherfuckers on the planet.
Oh, God.
I like turned back to him though, and I'm like, "It is pretty cool though. Don't tell any of the mages I said that though."
He says, "Not even Lannan?"
"Okay, well, I'll tell Lannan, but that's different."
He says, "Oh, is it? And how is it different? I'm very curious to know how it's different."
It's you know, well, it's, you know, sometimes at night when you're talking, just, you know, we talk about, okay, stop looking at me like that. Stop. I'm going to get, like, get up. I'm gonna help in the kitchen again.
I feel like you're banned from the kitchen.
Yeah, I'm going to go help in the kitchen. You stand up, walk to the kitchen, and Ferris is like, "Get out."
I like come back and sit down heavily at the table, and I'm like, "I don't want to talk about Lannan with you. You get weird about it."
He says, "You know, I am happy for you, right?"
"Yeah, I picked that up with all of the being mean to me."
"It's how I show my love."
"It's my favorite thing about you. How are you and Zevran?" "I mean, you're probably great."
He says, "Zevran and me are doing great. Why, you want more details?"
No. My God, Ren.
"You asked.
You know what I regret? I regret bringing you back from the dead."
"Yeah, that was a bad move on your part."
"Agreed." Glad we both agree on something. Ugh. I'm like, "So yeah, you and Zevran are great. That's good. Yeah. Yeah, have you had a chance to talk to Lannan recently?"
Well, I mean, he was in a coma for like the last couple days, so no, not super a lot."
Excellent. "Well, maybe you should talk to him. That'd be great. I think he has some news."
"Listen, I know I made jokes about having him in a threesome, but I'm genuinely not going to step it like in your territory."
"God." "This feels like a bad time to bring this up, but I suppose if not now."
"Bring what up?"
"Lana told me that Hawk found Meryl."
You don't really know what you were expecting. Like, well, when you got the news, I imagine you felt like setting something on fire a little bit.
Yeah. No, definitely wanted to go beat the shit out of something.
Yeah, there's none of that in Ren. He takes it in stride. He had like a big cup of, what does Ren drink? I don't know. Wine? No, not wine. He's not fancy enough for wine. Probably like
beer.
Yeah, like
ale.
Beer or like honeyed mead, something like that. He takes a swig of that and he says, "Where is she?"
He says that Hawk found her in Tantorville.
And the Free Marches. That's a bit of a hike from where our clan roamed.
Yeah, I imagine she wanted to get away as far as possible. I would after the legacy she left behind.
He says, I guess we should probably go talk to her then.
We should do something, for sure. I don't know how much talking I'd be planning on doing.
He says, I guess it really depends on what she says.
What could she possibly say that would make this any different, Ren?
I mean, did she have intent?
I don't care what she had. I care about the outcome of her actions. I care that there's no longer a Clan Sabray because of what she did.
He says, yeah, I mean, you don't need to preach to me. I lost my clan too, same as you, but I don't know, it just seems like what would be the value in punishing her if she's not going to do something like this again? I don't know, I just want to talk to her before we figure out how we're going to deal with this. Remember, she is also Clan Sabray. We're the only three left.
My mouth is just set in like a really like hard line, and I'm just like clenching my fists really tightly on the table. I think you and I have vastly different opinions about this subject, brother.
Says, yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong, if she did this intentionally, if I suspect there's even a trace of vindictiveness, I'll be the first one to strike her down. But like I said, I want to talk to her first.
You talk. And when we're done, I'll do what needs to be done.
He wordlessly takes a sip.
I think I just sort of get up and I'm like, well, I'm sorry to spoil the party, but...
He says, no, you didn't spoil anything. I had to know.
We'll have time to think about it on the way there. I will, I need to go check on Lannan.
Yeah. I'll talk to Dorian about, maybe sneaking in a trip to Tantervale. Go check on your boyfriend. Your boyfriend.
That's the horrible tone of voice. Thanks,
your boyfriend.
Bye.
He's your boyfriend.
Okay.
He's shouting after
you. Okay, I'm leaving. Yeah, so I start weaving my way upstairs.
And when you come up and find Lannan, he is sitting upright now, and he is experimentally stretching his leg out. And yeah, there are definitely a couple bite marks on that leg. That darkspawn really did try to just tear his entire leg off, huh?
I, like, lean on the door, sexily, and,
You think you do.
Shut yep. the fuck up. And I say, you know, I've always liked men with scars.
He says, yeah, the pus does it for me. He, like, stretches his leg out.
Like, ruin it. Just ruin the moment. Thanks. Just great job. I, like, come in and I flop down heavily next to him.
Scars are sexy after the fact. Right now, it's turning green and leaking blood, so...
Look, I'm just trying to cheer you up and let you know that in the future, after these have healed, I'll still think you're sexy, in case you were worried.
I'll have a sexy, bite-shaped scar on my leg. Awesome.
Yeah. Men love that, honestly. Like, if you ever get tired of me, there's just lots of men will just flock to your doorstep.
I think you're severely overestimating my potential dating pool. He leads forward and he lights his hands up with a little bit of healing magic. He can really only do it in small chunks at a time because the infection is pretty bad and he can only heal the parts that are no longer infected. He heals up a small portion near the knee and then he starts rewrapping the wound again.
I'm watching him doing it and I'm like, I mean, in all seriousness though, or is that going to heal?
Yeah, eventually. I have to let the worst of the infection work itself out with, you know, the natural way, the immune system way. I can only really heal it once the worst of the infection's gone. It'll be fine. It'll take maybe another week or two, but I'll be all right.
Oh, good. I wouldn't want you to lose your leg or something. That would be uncomfortable.
I already lost one limb. At this point, it would just be unfair.
Just make it a matching set. I think it's actually...
He says, wait, I just realized something. I lost my left arm, and I could lose my left leg, and then I'll be all right! Oh my god!
Oh god. I just, like, punch him in the shoulder.
Oh, is it too late to amputate? That would be awesome! I could make that joke for the rest of my life!
Oh god. Oh, this is not what I wanted. No, I, like, punch him on the shoulder and groan horribly and, like, lay back on the bed.
So are we going to clear out some time before we go to Parvalin?
I think we've got a little bit. I don't know. We need to talk to Dorian and see what's going on. I just told Ren about the news you shared with me.
How'd he take it?
Surprisingly well.
Mm, yeah, that does sound like him.
He's so infuriatingly calm about everything. It's one of his most irritating qualities.
Yeah, that does sound like him. He says, do you want me to come with you?
I think it just like paused for a second. And I turn to him and I say, yes. But it's a lot to ask.
He says, I mean, I might have to like roll to Tanterville, but I could definitely come.
I'm worried what you'll see of me.
He says, listen, there's nothing that you can say to Meryl that I didn't say to myself. You're not going to shock me.
It's not what I'm going to say that concerns me. And I sort of stand up and pace over to the wall. I just don't know if I can... Ren wants to talk to her, and I don't want to talk to her. I want her gone. I have spent the last years, decades of my life in pursuit of revenge, and I always said that when I saw Meryl, I was going to walk up to her and I was going to stab her with her own knife and leave her dying alone, just like she left my clan.
I mean, I'm not going to say I don't understand the sentiment. And whatever you decide, I'm with you. You know that, right? He says, you'll be okay, Venon. You're stronger and, I think, kinder than even you know. You're going to be able to get through this, whatever happens.
I appreciate your faith in me, because I don't know if I have it in myself. And I sort of sit heavily on the bed.
Well, that's what you do when you love someone. You believe in them, even when they don't believe in themselves.
It would mean a lot to me if you came, Venon. It would mean a lot.
And consider it done. Dorian won't be happy. I'll have to limp most of the way, but I'll make it happen.
Dorian's never happy with me, so...
So, Elian, Compassion has made it clear to you over the past, like, since you had that very intense meeting? Sure, meeting with the soul of Leander. Like his soul, since you've had that meeting, Compassion has given you a couple more details about the nature of the ritual. He has made it clear that you don't even have to perform it. Like the ritual itself is so like stupefyingly simple for someone as talented as Compassion. He's not trying to humble brag. He literally is just saying, like, it's so stupidly simple. Like, I don't understand how you guys don't get it. It's literally just a very basic summoning with a very basic request. And he has taught Dorian how to do it. So you don't even have to perform it. He doesn't have to possess you.
Oh, I don't know how to feel about this now that I'd be more of a spectator.
But how has Elian, generally speaking, been feeling the last few days? Let's check in with Elian. Let's have a heart-to-heart.
I mean, he hadn't dealt with anything particularly well on the trip back, and then was, you know, literally dragged into that Pocken and the Fade, like, the second he set foot back in the Pavis estate. So it's a little much. I think there's too much going on. Like, there's been no time, I feel like, to breathe, you know, with Lannan being down, with May being down, with trying to get prepared for everything. There's just, you know, no time for anxiety brain to be anxious.
Oh, that's fair. Has he changed his mind at all about his opinions on Leander's situation and anything like that?
He's obviously not as snap judgmental as he had been. Like, it's a complicated thing, and I think it's not something that he's going to be able to change on overnight or even over course of a week or two, but it's he's trying to be more understanding.
Okay. Well, Dorian, who is riding high on the success, like, he cannot fucking believe that worked for May.
Oh, same.
Like, it actually worked. Like, we did a plan and it fucking worked. Like, hello?
Oh, I know. I feel like Elian was most excited about that. Like, wait, we actually...
You did a thing and it fucking worked. Like, who... when did this happen? When did we get competent?
It was a fluke.
It was just a one-time thing. Everything else is going to go to absolute shit from now on.
Next arc is mine. Be quiet.
Everyone quiet. Yes. Dorian is riding high on the success of Maverus's ritual, and Compassion did teach Dorian how to do this summoning thing, and apparently he was right. Like, the ritual is so stupefyingly simple that Dorian can, like, as soon as he says, like, it's this, you use this glyph in this way, and Dorian's like, oh, yeah, that is super easy. And then he agrees to perform it. Like, he is on board. Like, he knows how badly Leander wants this. So he goes ahead and he gets everything set up the next day.
Yeah, I mean, like, Elian wants this as soon as possible, like, whether it works, whether it doesn't, like, he knows that this is a priority for Leander at this point, and he wouldn't fight that anyway, even if Compassion hadn't taught Dorian how to do it. Even if he himself had to let Compassion cast through him twice in a row.
And it's happening, like I said, the next day. You briefly check on Maverus at breakfast, and she looks great. Like, she's already got color back in her cheeks. She hasn't really gained any of the weight back, because that's not how, like, metabolism works. Like, it's going to take a couple weeks for her to get back up to her regular weight. But she looks amazing. She's in good spirits, and she is just... It's like a miracle. Like, you fucking cured the blight. And if it weren't so incredibly prosaic, it would be baffling. But while everyone is upstairs having breakfast, Dorian and Leander are downstairs. Who is also downstairs, if anyone?
That's a good question. I feel like Cass would want to be there, but, like, she also wants to bask in, like, May's newness.
It is pretty sweet having a girlfriend who's not dying, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
It's pretty great.
I mean, Elian is, obviously, he's not gonna just let this go by, no matter how weird it is to be an observer and knowing that he can't do anything, actually, but...
I think I'm still up with Lanin, so probably not me.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that Kaz is there just because, like, you know, everyone else was there for her, so she's like, okay, I'm gonna be there for you.
Ren probably isn't there. He doesn't know Leander super well. So, whereas everyone had come down to, like, cheer May on, you know, everyone who was everyone in the Pavis Estate was crowding into that big laboratory underneath the Pavis Estate. For Leander's ritual, it's you and Dorian and Cassandra. And the room feels a lot emptier than last time. And so the ritual that has been set up looks remarkably different. For one, there's no big circle on the ground or anything like that. The glyph actually appears to be painted directly onto Leander, which is very interesting. Dorian is sitting in front of him on the floor with this little, like a paintbrush, like a real legit paintbrush, full of this slightly glowing blue paint. It looks to your uneducated eye like lyrium-infused paint, actually. And he is going around and he's tracing it, like the top of the circle follows the crest of his forehead, the bottom of it hits the middle of his chest. It's very detailed, and it is wrapped very precisely around his face. And when you come downstairs, Elian, he looks sideways over at you very briefly, but he doesn't move. He doesn't want to fuck up the paint on him. And then he looks forward at Dorian, and again he says, I didn't expect you to be here.
I wanted to support you.
What a refreshing change of pace.
I didn't come to fight.
He says, I suppose you didn't. It must be nice to be able to decide when to care about my tranquility.
Elian's biting his lip.
Cass is, like, trying to hold your hand, like, it's fine, it's fine.
Like, tried to apologize, got yanked into the fade before I could. Cool. We're fine.
It's going to take Dorian a minute before he's done painting, if you want to say anything more.
I'm sorry for what I said. I was out of line, and I hadn't thought about it, and I'm sorry about that. I'm trying to be better, and I didn't come for anything. I know that this is everything to you, and I want to support you.
He doesn't say anything.
Yeah, that's valid.
Dorian finishes up, like he finishes up a line on Leander's neck, and he says, "You know, I have to admit, when Compassion explained this ritual to me, I was actually quite blown away by the simplicity and the genius of this spell. Drawing the summoning circle directly onto the person that needs the summoning, that's quite ingenious."
Cass definitely, like, jumps into that magical conversation, like, "Yeah, that, I've never seen that before. That's a really good idea."
He says, "You know, I suppose it makes sense that it didn't survive, and the memories of ancient Arlathan, because, you know, we found traces of summoning circles in the ground laid in stone, but we never would have seen one painted onto someone's skin, I suppose." He says, "It's fascinating." And he stands up. Dorian says, "So like I said, Compassion did explain this ritual to me, and it actually is quite simple. It should really only take a couple minutes, and I have no fear of anything adverse going wrong." He looks around at the room and he says, "I'm a little surprised. Is this it? Where is everyone?" Leander says, "Don't worry about it, Dorian. I don't expect their understanding." Dorian looks a little heartbroken at that, and he pats his shoulder. He says, "Well, hopefully you can meet them all properly, right?"
"That's the hope."
Dorian says, "All right." And he claps his hands together. He's like, "Are we ready to get started?"
"I don't know why you keep asking us, Dorian."
"Because some of us," and he like glares at you, "are unnecessarily nervous around magic. That's why. You've been in Tevinter how long and you still get jumpy around summoning circles? Really, Elian?"
"I'm not as bad as Sabray."
"That's not a high bar."
"Really isn't, no."
And he says, "All right, well, like I said, it shouldn't take too long." He stands up, he pulls his staff out off over his back, he thumps the end of it onto the cold stone floor. He says, "The only advice I have for you, Leander, try not to move around too much. Compassion has advised me that it might itch a little bit." And Leander says, "The markings might itch?" He says, "Yeah, I know, strange side effect, right? But he said that's the only thing you have to worry about." And he raises one hand, he holds it about 6 inches away from Leander's face, and he begins a slow muttering under his breath. The marks on Leander's skin start to glow a little bit, as does Dorian's hand. Cassandra, being a mage, you can feel the veil shift and ripple a little bit. You can definitely tell he is reaching into the fade. But unlike last time, where the spell felt really clumsy, like it was this huge circle on the ground that, like, pulled open the fade and, like, yelled into the distance, like, "Hey, any spirits of faith around here?" This one is very exact. It's like a hypodermic needle piercing straight through the veil and pulling out exactly what it needs. Mm. It's a very slight ripple, but you feel the shift of the fade, even from the other side of the veil. And it takes maybe 15, 20 seconds of chanting, and then you hear an extremely loud crack. And everyone, I would like to make a very quick con stamina roll for me.
Oh, delightful.
Oh, good.
Seriously?
Jesus.
Seriously?
What the hell?
I am calling shenanigans. You are hacking the server, Missy. I'm calling it right now. So there's a very loud crack. Dorian and Cassandra, you both fall flat on your asses. Nice. Just straight the fuck over. And it does, like, there's obviously no, like, physical force. Like, there's no, like, you didn't get hit by a spell that knocked you forward. Mm. It was just the force of the veil snapping back into place. And the both, two of you fall. Elian, you stagger a bit, but you manage to maintain your footing. And when your eyes readjust to the sudden flash in the sound, you see Leander hunched over, and he is not moving, although he is shaking a little bit.
Leander?
He doesn't answer.
Are you okay? Elliot kind of approaches, like...
You approach him. As soon as you get within about an arm's distance of him, he suddenly sobs.
Leander?
And he continues to sob. It's like this... You can't tell if he's laughing or crying. It's this full-throated, hysterical sound. you don't know what emotion it is conveying. Too many? Probably too many. Too many emotions. He doubles over even further. He braces both hands on the ground, and this horrible, wonderful, racking, definitely racking sound shakes his entire body. Dorian says, I think that's a... It's gotta be a good sign, right? Whatever emotion it is, it's definitely emotion.
Right?
He says, Leander, I don't know what you're feeling right now, but we could really use a check-in. Are you feeling anything at all? Leander looks up, tears are streaming down his face, and he, for the very first time, is smiling at you, Elian.
That breaks it. I don't care that I've been told not to touch an emotional mage. I'm hugging him.
And you know what? Like, he is so overwrought that you were in an argument or something. He doesn't really remember. He hugs you very, very tightly. And you can feel strange electricity crackling along his skin as you touch him. It's strange. It's not unpleasant, but it's definitely something you've never really experienced before. And Dorian's like, we're just doing one impossible thing after another in the Pavis estate this week.
Don't jinx it.
We sure have.
First we cure the blight, now we cure tranquility. What else should we shoot for?
I think the next goal was eradicating slavery, Dorian.
Oh, right. We should probably do that.
Right.
So this hug continues for a while, Elian. Eventually, something snaps in him and he shoves you back and he says, how could you have not understand that magic is an essential part of me? How could you not understand that it was vital to who I am and what I stand for? It's an integral part of my being.
I'm sorry.
It's like separating a limb from myself. It's like carving out my own heart. And you stand there and you have the audacity to be afraid and disgusted by it. How dare you? And then he kisses you, like, really hard.
Wow. All right. That was a roller coaster. I've got emotions back and cure all of them.
And now he's got all the emotions all at once.
Ellen's like, okay, we're just going to go with this.
He says, how absolutely dare you? And then he pushes you down onto the floor. He's like climbing on top of you. And Dorian's like, okay, can you at least take it upstairs?
Cass is like, oh, this is okay. Goodbye.
And then suddenly he looks up at the two of you like he's finally remembering he's not the only person in this room. He says, Dorian! And he stands up and he throws himself at Dorian. Dorian catches this small, excitable elf child and just like, oh my god, okay, I never thought I'd get a hug from Leander. But he hugs you and he's like, Dorian, you've been such an amazing friend. Thank you for everything you did for me. Thank you for standing up to Magister Ronan for me. Thank you for freeing me from slavery. And then he goes to Yukasana and he hugs you tightly, just full on panda, just like, like attaching himself to you. Thank you so much for supporting me. I wish I could have expressed how much it meant to me.
And then she's like patting it. He's very short compared to her. So she's
he is extremely short. He's like 5'6", I think, 5'7". He's very, very short.
She's just like, yeah, she's like looking over at Elian and just like awkwardly patting him like, yeah, hugs are great. What's happening?
Dorian says, from everything that I heard from Cassandra, this is actually quite normal. When a tranquil finally gets access to the fade again, gets access to their emotions, sometimes they can just all come out at once. And he says, I love being part of the Lucerne. Thank you. Thank you so much for helping me. And then he goes and back and hugs you, Elian.
Oh, my.
Would you like a cup of tea?
No, he doesn't. Dorian says, Dorian is like trying to talk to you as over like the sound of Leander's hysterical sobbing. He says, you're going to have to brace yourself for like a lot of this. He says, it will settle out from what I've heard. Best case scenario, tranquil that have been, you know, cured can settle out slowly and regain some sort of emotional control. But you're going to have to brace yourself for a lot of this for a while. Okay.
This bit he can handle. It's the flip side that he's not looking forward to. Good emotions, good.
Cassius pats you on the back.
You're just going to get all of them at once for, like, a while. Mm-hmm. It's just something that you're just going to have to get used to.
I'm not used to being the least dramatic in the room.
Good luck.
Cassandra.
Yes.
Maverus has been cooking a lot.
Yeah.
Like a lot. Like she has meal planned through next month, basically.
Nice.
Like apparently, like, as like she takes the time to explain it to you. Like, it was one thing that Faith and Maveris didn't realize they had in common. They both really liked cooking. Mm. And now that they're essentially one person, that has been extrapolated upon. And now she really, really likes cooking. And she loves feeding people, and she loves, you know, like, making sure everyone is gathered around a dinner table and, like, eating well. And it's pretty great. Like, it's amazing to see her have this much energy and this much vivacity. You haven't seen that in her for a long time.
Yeah, like, especially after being in the Deep Roads for so long. Yeah, and watching her waste away, this is definitely, like, wow.
And the one person, like, everyone else is kind of overwhelmed. Like, I can only eat so physically. I can only eat so much in one day, Maveris. Please dial it back a little bit. The one exception to this rule has been Iron Bull.
That's what I thought. Yep. Just the bottomless pit of a stomach.
He is just a void. It just accepts anything Maveris feeds him, which has been great for Maveris, because she has absolutely loved cooking for just anyone who will accept food. Iron Bull is fucking he is all about this, and he gets to be quite like a staple at the Pavis dinner table. Like, yeah, he loves Dorian and he spends time with Dorian, but also lots of free good food. So there's that.
That's legit.
It is, honestly, what are meal times anymore, especially right. For Iron Bull. But it is around 3 p.m. and Maveris is making second brunch, I guess, for Iron Bull.
I feel like just seeing him at the table makes Cass, like, again, like, just shake her head, like, you're really, really encouraging this. You know, she's meal planned. I think we're good for the next apocalypse or the next blight.
He says, listen, I never get home cooking. Like, you've got to let me have this. Do you have any idea how long mercenaries spend on the road?
That's true. I don't fault you.
Just let it happen. I'm begging you. Please just let me have this.
Cass just like, all right, I suppose, and like sits down.
Maveris comes over with a huge bowl of some, like, gumbo, you think, and she sets it down in front of all Iron Bull. She's like, enjoy, and then she runs back into the kitchen. Iron Bull digs in,
but yeah, Cass just sort of like watches this happen and just like watches Bull eat for a while, and then it's like, there's something that I should have talked to you about before.
He says, yeah, what's up?
And, like, before, she's, like, expecting resistance or whatever, and, like, before you get mad, I'm not used to being around other Qunari that don't want to hurt me or kill me or imprison me, so...
He says, I'm not Qunari anymore. And neither are you.
Right. Right. So...
He slurps his gumbo loudly.
Cass is just like, all right, so this is fine. I received a letter in code, inviting me to meet some mysterious contact in Kunindar.
He says, excuse me?
Yeah, I had Zevran help me crack it, and we both agree it's definitely a trap.
He says, can I see it?
I'll say that she came prepared for this. Like, I have to talk to somebody about a thing. I better bring the evidence. And she's like, yeah, and just sort of hands it over, like, I have it here.
He looks at the paper, and the first thing, like, it's easy to forget because he's huge and, like, a giant vacuum for food. But Iron Bull is, like, almost always the smartest person in any building he walks into. Mm-hmm. He looks at the folded piece of paper, and he turns it over, and he says, the edges of this are really badly frayed. How long have you had this? It had to have been at least 3-4 months.
About that, yeah.
So you got a coded letter from somewhere in Parfallon, and you didn't think to consult the ex-Ben Hosseroth until just now?
As I said, I'm not used to being around others with the connection to the Kuhn.
He says, okay. He unfolds it, and he starts to read it. Zevran had scribbled the translation on the side in his his handwriting is very pointy. Fun fact about Zevran, his handwriting is pointy.
I like that.
And he reads through the translation on the margins, and halfway through the letter, he forgets that he is eating gumbo, which is a big red flag.
Uh-oh.
For those of you who do not remember, I'll just quickly, because it has been a while since we have read this letter, I'll quickly reread it. Forgive the cloak and dagger. The eyes of the Ben Hosroth are everywhere. There are whispers in Parvalon of a Sarabas who escaped the Kuhn. These whispers exist in spite of the efforts of those who would quash them, those who see your liberation as a threat to the Kuhn. But there are others who would join you, wielders of magic, like you, who yearn to breathe free, as well as those who sympathize with them, those like me. I was forced to watch as you were ripped from my arms all those years ago for no other reason than the circumstances of your birth. I have lived with the guilt since that day. I am not the only one who feels this way. We are growing in number, and we could use help on the outside. The Kuhn needs to change. You may be just the one to change it. I hope that you remember your Tama. I will be waiting for you in the westernmost dock of Parvalon 2 days before the Triumvirate Summit at midnight. You are the key. I will be waiting. So the big implication from this is that there is an underground rebellion against the Kuhn. Specifically because of the way that Sarabas are treated under the Kuhn. Which that is pretty, if true, that's almost difficult to believe. Like, Cassandra, you were brought up so firmly under the thumb of the Kuhn that to you, the idea of rebellion probably seems, well, I mean, you tell me, does it seem unimaginable? What does it seem to you?
Definitely. And like, it's been long enough that she's been free of it, but still, like, the idea, like, other people? Would a lot of them? That feels what?
Yeah, it's quite a lot. And Iron Bull actually reads the letter a couple times. You don't know what he's looking for on each reread. But eventually he sits back kind of heavily in his chair and he says, well, damn.
Indeed.
He says, okay, so I'll give you both sides to it. I want to be transparent here. I want to start by saying that the Ben Hosroth did shit like this a lot. It was actually the most effective method of capturing those who had escaped the Kuhn.
That doesn't surprise me.
He says, we really only needed to do it with people who were deemed high risk, you understand. People who worked very close to higher echelons of the Kuhn, those who knew state secrets and who had turned Talvashoth, that kind of thing. We really only broke out this method if we really needed to recover someone. And he says, and, you know, not to dampen your ego or anything, but you don't strike me as a high-value target for the Ben Hosroth. Sarabas escaped the Kuhn more than you probably imagine.
Yeah, Cass is sort of like rolling that over in her head, like, what could I possibly know that would endanger me? You're right.
He says, it's possible it has something to do with your sire, the Arishak, although I sort of doubt it. Parentage doesn't really matter that much.
True.
And he says, now, the other side of this coin, there are underground rebellions against the Kuhn within Parvalon all the time. And that news is actually kind of shocking.
Yeah, definitely. I, like, widen my eyes. I'm like, what?
He says, they happened more times than the Ben Hosroth would ever admit. All the time, there were people trying to rise up against the various injustices of the Kuhn. And the Ben Hosroth's job was overwhelmingly to quash them, to kill them in the cradle before they got too big. Frequently, he says, they were masterminded by Tamasrans.
That makes sense.
He says, it does. You know, you raise a child and something bad happens to that child. It's only natural that you'd want to stop the institution that made it that way.
And Cass is definitely thinking about, like, her own Tama, like, way back.
Yeah. So let's talk about your Tama for a minute, Cass. What is your strongest memory of your Tama?
Oh, I feel like Cass definitely remembers very strongly that her Tama had a temper and was very impatient with adults, not children, but with other adults.
And that was a feature that was definitely unique to your Tama. Like, most Tamasarans in Parvalon had the reputation of being quite scary. Like, Tamasarans are the one in the Kuhn. Like, their role is to listen and to speak, and that gives way to usually being quite gossipy. So Tamasarans know everything. If you don't want to cross someone who knows everything about you.
Mm-hmm.
But your Temastrin specifically, she did have that sort of fiery temperament, but never against you, never against anyone else raised with you. She was always the picture of maternity and gentleness and kindness to you and to those raised with you. Mm-hmm. Do you have fond memories of your Tama?
I would say that she probably does, like up until the dream with a capital D.
The incident.
Yeah. The incident, yeah. Which was really sad because she's like, but I don't want to leave my Tama though.
Is Cassandra willing to believe that specifically her Tama would lead a rebellion like this?
She has a hard time believing. Like, yes, she was very good at raising her, but she's like, but, you know, she was always taught very strictly. She was brought up very, like, steeped in the Kyun. So she's like, I don't know.
And as you are going through this, like, journey on your face of, like, well, yeah, like, she really cared about me, but, you know, she was also, she really drank deep from that Kyun juice. As you are, like, debating that in your head, Iron Bull finally says, I mean, I guess it's up to you. It would be a pretty big risk to take, but if this rebellion is big enough that they manage to get a letter out of Parvalon without the Ben Hasrath knowing, it might actually have a damn good shot of changing things.
Hey friends, Tessa here. If you're desperate to hear the next episode, chances are good that you can by joining our Discord server. We post links to all episodes in pre-release, and you can even chat with us and listen live as we record. Join us by going to bit.ly/CFCDiscord. For more information on the show, character biographies, and links to social media, head to our website, critfail.club or critfailclub.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. Critfail Club does not advertise at all, so if you like what you hear, tell a friend who might also like it, make a post on social media about it, or leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Full episodes are available on our YouTube channel, bit.ly/CFCchannel, or wherever you get your podcasts.